everyone. My name is Philippe, and this is the podcast Life with AI, the podcast that we talk about artificial intelligence in a simpler way. And for today's episode, actually, I'm going to talk about a variety of subjects because I gave a lecture in Brazil and people said that the lecture was quite nice. So what I'm going to do is that I'm going to give the same lecture for you here in the podcast. And in the Brazilian version of the podcast, I have the recording of the lecture, so I'm just going to publish it. Okay, and what we're going to talk though in this podcast, we're going to talk about how to train neural networks, not only like CNNs and so on, but also large language models. How are they trained? We're going to talk about supervised learning, self-supervised learning, then a little bit about tokenization, that is, how do we input text into large language models. And I'm going to talk also a little bit about document intelligence, that is the problem that I work with in real life, like what gives me money to survive, actually. Anyways, so let's start, and I'm going to focus on deep learning. I'm not going to talk a lot about, actually, I'm not going to talk at all about machine learning. I'm going to focus on deep learning. And let's first understand what is supervised learning. So supervised learning, let's take an example of a CNN. CNN stands for convolutional neural network and is a model used to classify or do stuff about images. If you don't know what is a CNN, I have a podcast explaining what it is, like how the architecture looks like and so on. I think it's the third episode of the podcast. I'm not going to re-explain what is a CNN and how it works. I'm going to focus more on the learning part of those algorithms, and I'm going to start with supervised learning. So supervised learning, you should think about it like a baby. Not a baby, but maybe a child. A child that doesn't know anything about anything. And then you're going to have the problem of classifying images between, like, if it's a cat or a dog. An easy problem, but for a child that doesn't know anything and doesn't know what is a cat or a dog, it's super hard because it's learning for the first time. And you should think about the algorithm exactly like this. Once you initialize a new model, the model doesn't know anything about nothing. Okay, so you have images about cats and dogs. First thing, you're going to give one image for the child or for the model. It's exactly the same. And the child is going to predict, okay, it's a cat, but actually it's a dog. And then you're going to say, no, it's not a cat, it's a dog. And the child going to try to understand and to learn what are the patterns in that image that make it to be a dog and not a cat. So the child might have realized that because this is like a dark image, so like the dog is a black dog, it's not a white one, that's why it's a dog. And then you give a new image of a dog that is white now. And then the child gonna say, okay, no, now it's a cat because the other one was dark. But actually, it is also a dog, but now it's black. So once you give those images, the child gonna learn different patterns and gonna understand, okay, this is a dog and this is a cat. Once you give like 50 images, 100 images, the child gonna know what is a cat and is a dog. What's the difference between a child and an algorithm? Is that a child has a limited amount of time to take a look on those images. And the child will also get tired at a moment. The algorithm, if you give 10 images, 100 images, 1,000 images, 1 million images, or 1 billion images, well, if you have enough computing power, it's exactly the same. So this is supervised learning, and that's why it works. Because neural networks, those models, you can give a lot of examples, like a huge amount of examples. And by those examples, the model gonna learn. Gonna learn the way to extract the features. Actually, this is something very important about deep learning, because machine learning, we give the features to the model. So like, imagine that you have a problem like credit card transactions and you want to know if it's a fraud or not. You have a lot of features like the time of the day that the transaction was made, the amount, like how many transactions this person made in the last, like, I don't know, month or week and so on. So these are the features. On deep learning, we don't have features. Imagine an image. Like, you can extract features yourself, like the texture of the animal and like the color of the animal, the format of the nose and so on. But those features, you need to extract yourself. They are not easy numbers that you already have. So this is exactly what the deep learning model is doing. It is learning a way to extract those features. And once the model extracts the features, then you can make an easy prediction, like as if you had all the possibilities, like, I don't know, the texture of the animal and this kind of stuff. So because we don't have it, and if you want to extract those features manually, it would be almost impossible. Like for cats and dogs, maybe we would be able to, but if you go for like a variety range of categories, like ImageNet, that we have like 1,000 categories, it's impossible to extract features manually. So the model gonna learn the best way of extracting those features. And one thing about deep learning and especially CNNs that is very important is fine-tuning, because you never, well, almost never train a model from scratch. What means training a model from scratch? You're gonna initialize randomly the model and you're gonna train the whole model from scratch. What we do is that we fine-tune this model, which means that we take a pre-trained version, like a trained on ImageNet or some other data data set that is very big. And then we just adjust, we just adapt the last weights of the model. So if you take the last layer or even like all the layers, but with a small learning rate. I'm sorry if the episode is super technical, but like this lecture was super technical. So I'm trying to like do the same as I did. Anyways, so fine tuning is very good because first the model learns the representation of the word. So if you have ImageNet, you have more, like you have millions of images with 1,000 classes. So you learn a representation of the word. You learn how to extract features of like a huge variety of categories of stuff that you can see in the word. And once the model knows how to extract those features, it can work like for medical images that has nothing to do with the image that it saw before. Why? Because the features that it needs to extract are similar in like human cells than with in buildings, cars, trees, dogs, cats, and this kind of stuff. So this is the reasoning behind supervised learning. But supervised learning was very useful till the arrival of self-supervised learning. Why? Supervised learning is like powerful, but the problem is that you need to annotate your data. So you need an image and you need to know if this image is a cat, a dog, like a building or something else. Self-supervised learning, you don't need any annotation. So you have billions and billions and billions of images on the internet, but just a few of them are annotated. So you can only, despite having like billions of images, you can only train your model with a small subsample of them. However, if you can train with the billions and billions of images without the need of the labels of the annotations, like you have a huge amount of data that now you are able to use and before you weren't. So what happens is they found a way of training those models without the label, which is called self-supervised learning. And self-supervised learning, because it means that the model is learning without the label. You can do it with images, but now I'm gonna switch to text. Because on images, yeah, it works very well. Like now it's working very well. You have a masked out encoder and this kind of stuff. But for text, this is the game changing. Because on BERT, actually first, Transformer is all you need. This is a paper from 2017. And then you had BERT, that is a paper from 2018, that they showed that with the Transformer architecture and a self-supervised learning, you could train a model with like a lot of text. And with this pre-trained model that knows language itself, now you are able to perform a lot of tasks. And since 2018 till now with ChatGPT, GPT-4, it's almost the same type of training. GPT-4, like as I explained in the previous episodes, is a pre-training using self-supervised learning and then reinforcement learning with human feedback. But the beginning of it all is self-supervised learning. When you pre-train your model with the whole internet and with GPT-4, they said it's 13 trillion tokens, like a lot of text. Okay, so let's go. What is self-supervised learning? Self-supervised learning is when you learn from the data itself. On images, like you can mask a part of the image, and from the rest, like from the context, you need to predict what is inside that part that you mask. So imagine like for a person, you can only see half of the image and you would need to say what was in the rest of the image that you cannot see. So this is self-supervised learning on image. And there are other ways of doing it. I just gave an example. And self-supervised learning on text, there are two famous methods. The first one is masked language model that you're gonna have, and this was what was trained, used to train BERT. And in this one, what you have is you have a sentence and you're gonna mask some words of the sentence. By masking some words of the sentence, you're gonna have your model that will need to predict what is the word that was masked. By doing this, the model needs to understand the semantics and the syntax of the sentence. And if the model is able to understand the context and the sentence and predict, yeah, what is the word that was masked, it means that the model understands language itself. So this is self-supervised learning for BERT, and you also have self-supervised learning for GPT. For GPT 1, 2, 3, 4, what they do is that basically they predict the next token. So you give the beginning of the sentence, and from the beginning of the sentence, the model gonna predict the next token. From the beginning of the sentence plus this token, gonna predict the next. And with this, the model is able to know and understand what is in the internet. Like in the end, it does know what is language itself, but it's basically an auto completion that you can complete, doesn't matter what. And what they saw is that it not only can complete by giving the beginning of the sentence, but it also can answer questions and so on. So, well, you can see the power of GPT-4. But some years ago, we had GPT-3, and GPT-3 was already very, very heavy. And GPT-3 was already a very, very powerful algorithm. The problem is that, of course, it has less knowledge than GPT-3.5 and GPT-4. But the biggest difference of GPT-4 to GPT-3, well, not the biggest because there are other stuff, is that the model knows how to talk to people. GPT-3 doesn't know how to talk to people, only knows how to complete stuff. So if you ask a question, it's gonna directly answer or complete what you asked, but it's not able to talk to you. When they launched ChatGPT, they taught a model that was already very smart to complete stuff, like not smart, maybe smart is not a good word, but was very good on completing sentences by giving the next word, next word, next word. But now ChatGPT and GPT-4, it also able to talk to you. So this was the game changing. But still, the algorithm behind it all is self-supervised learning using next token prediction for the GPT family of algorithms. Okay, so as we said, talked about this pre-training with self-supervised learning. I said here in the lecture, what is ChatGPT, but I think I explained a lot. But what is important to say about ChatGPT is that it is only able to do one thing, that is predict the next token. Doesn't matter if it was trained using self-supervised and then you use the reinforcement learning with human feedback. What matters is, the only thing that ChatGPT is able to do is predict the next token. And then what is this next token? Actually, a token is not a word. A token actually is a sub-representation of the word. What we say is that a sub-word, and you have your vocabulary, that you have your words, and then, the tokenizer, the tokenization process is a way of, like, what's the best way of encoding those words? I want you, because if you encode only on characters, you will need to predict a lot of characters, so it's painful. If you just have the words, you need a vocabulary that is a huge size to contain, to have all the words in our vocabulary, because the vocabulary is super rich and you cannot, like, no one knows all the words. Like, you would need a list. I don't know what's the size of the list to have all the words in a vocabulary, but with the subword representation, I can imagine that you have the word faster. Faster, you can divide it between fast and ER to have the faster. And then with the same tokenization with faster, fast, you can have fastest. Fast is a subword, and then EST is another subword. The same like for quickest. Quick is a subword, and EST is another subword. So with this way, we are able to, with way less tokens, with a vocabulary with a way smaller size, we are able to have all the words in the vocabulary that are possible. If there is a word like that no one ever saw, maybe it will predict character by character, or like two characters by two characters, but still, like, it's the best way of doing it. So I hope you guys understood it. But anyways, I have a full episode explaining just tokenization. I don't know what's the number of the episode, but it's been like 10 episodes behind or 15. I don't know. So how ChatGPT was trained, guys, I'm just saying, like, I'm following the lecture that I gave, and it's been a while that I gave this lecture, but I hope, and it's a lot of technical stuff, but I hope you guys are, like, understanding what I'm saying. So how ChatGPT was trained? ChatGPT, as I said, is first trained by self-supervised learning on predicting the next token. They use trillions and trillions of tokens to do so. And well, on GPT-4 paper, they said it was two epochs. So maybe ChatGPT, it was also two epochs. It means that it saw the whole internet twice. So it was able to complete the whole internet twice. And then we have the reinforcement learning with human feedback training part. So first part is they train the model in a supervised way by giving a collection of data that people annotated. So given a question, someone gave the answer and the model tried to answer in the same way as a human. This is the first step. The second step is compare the comparison data. The second step is to train the reward model. What is the reward model? If we need a human to answer all the questions, it's not possible because time is a constraint for humanity, but time is not a constraint for algorithms. So if we have an algorithm that is able to do what humans are doing here, like to write a good answer or do something similar to it, it's way better. So what they do in the second step of ChatGPT training is that they train a reward model that, given a prompt, like given a question and an answer given by an algorithm, the reward model gonna learn how to give the reward, like say how good is this answer given the question. And how they do it, they put humans to rate the answers from 1 to 10, and you're gonna train this reward model to imitate what the humans are doing. So given a prompt, a question, and like five different answers, the model gonna say, okay, this first answer is better than the second, that is worse than the third, that is better than the fourth, and the fifth one is the best of them all. So once you have this reward model, you can train your model like forever. forever and ever, because you have this reward model that is able to say what are the best answers, and you have your model generating different answers infinitely. So one model is training the other. This is called reinforcement learning, and they use an algorithm called PPO, proximity policy optimization, something like this. I forgot the name and I don't have it here, but it's an algorithm also proposed by OpenAI a lot of years ago, and it's nice that they are using this algorithm to train the model. Now let's talk about something completely different, that is document intelligence. So how to extract information automatically from documents. It's a completely different subject, but as I said in the lecture, and it's what I work with, I think it's nice to talk about it again, despite I already did it like many times in this podcast. So first of all, why do we need to extract information automatically from documents? And what is the problem that I'm trying to solve in the company that I work? What happens is people are filling documents all the time. We work with medical documents, so it's even harder because it's doctor handwritten. But anyways, when you send this document to someone, to an agency, to the government, they need to manually extract all the information, like take all the information that you wrote in this document and put it in their system. It's not a good thing because like it's a lot of heavy manual work to read and type all the information that is in your document. And what happens most of the first, there are errors, a lot of mistakes in humans because they are tired of doing this. And what happens also is that they don't fill all the information. So if you have mandatory fields and nice to have fields, the human will only get the mandatory fields because the person has like hundreds of documents per day. And if it finishes faster, you're going to go home faster. So why the person going to put nice to have fields if you can only put mandatory fields? However, an algorithm, it's exactly the same to extract mandatory fields, nice to have fields, and all the other fields if you want to. You just need to train your algorithm to extract all the fields that you want. So knowing why this problem is relevant and what problem, like, and why, so knowing why this problem is relevant, let's see what should we do it to extract this information. First of all, as I said, most of the documents, they are handwritten and so on, so you don't have access to the text. When you have raw PDF, you can have access to the text, so you don't need to read the image yourself or put the algorithm to read, because, well, you have access to the text. But as we receive images, on images we only have pixels, we don't have the text, so we need to somehow extract, like somehow read the text inside this image. How do we do it? There is an algorithm called OCR, optical character recognition, and it's basically two algorithms, one that's gonna detect the text and one that's gonna extract the text, like recognize the text. It's one that's gonna detect the text, write, draw a bounding box saying, okay, it's an object detection problem. It's gonna write a bounding box, you're gonna draw a bounding box, and inside this bounding box you're gonna have the text, and then you're gonna have another model that's gonna recognize this model. So you have the detection part of the OCR and you have the recognition part of the OCR. There are some models that they try to do it end to end. So instead of detecting and then recognizing, it just reads everything by once and it recognizes all the text. And there are even models that are really end to end that they are called OCR free models, that instead of applying OCR to then extract information, you already ask a question and the model itself, without reading the image, but actually it is reading the image inside what it's doing, like it's a big transformer model, it's going to already give you the answer from your question. So these are the OCR free information extraction, but we're gonna talk about information extraction using OCR. So as I said, OCR is bounding box, like a detection and then a recognition. So first you find the bounding box and then you transcribe the text inside this bounding box, and with this you have access to the text inside your image. What is the second thing that you need to do? You need to extract information. So once you read the everything that is inside this document, you need to understand the relationship between all the text that you have, and by understanding this relationship, the algorithm is going to be able to extract this information. And the question that I always like to ask to people, even in my team and people that want to join our company, is how as a person, as a human, how do you extract information from documents? And normally people, they say, oh, I just read the text, so like I have access to the text and then I extract what I need. But actually it's not reading the text, only reading the text. It's reading the text, seeing the relationship between the position of the text that you are reading. So like if you have name in the top of the page and name in the bottom of the page, for sure the name in the top of the page will be related to something differently than the one in the bottom of the page. So it's not only reading the text, but also understanding the position of this text to get the relationship between all the text that you have. And you also understand the layout of the image. You not only see like the position of it, but you can have a layout that you're gonna have name and the actual name in the right of name, or you're gonna have name and the actual name below the name. And what not going to give you this information is actually the layout. So you have three different modalities here. You have the textual modality, you have the spatial modality, that is the position, and you also have the visual modality, that is the layout of the document. So you need to find a model that's gonna, well, take into account all these three modalities. And there are some models that do it. The ones that everybody uses are LayoutLM. There are three versions of LayoutLM, V1, V2, and V3. V1 is open for commercial use, and V2 and V3, that works much better. They are not open for commercial use. And there is also another model called Lilith that is open for commercial use and works better than LayoutLM for what we tested. So it's nice to have it in mind. And well, training this model, that is this transformer models, that they are multimodal because they take into account this different information, you are able to have a very good extraction results for your model. And well, I think that's it, guys. It was a lot of information in a short amount of time. I hope it was not super technical and you were able to understand it. But anyways, I hope you enjoyed the episode. Don't forget to follow the podcast on social media. On Instagram, we are podcast.lifewithai, and on LinkedIn, we are Life with AI. And yeah, guys, till next episode. Goodbye.